WATD-FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton. This is the South Shore's radio station, 95.9 FM WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD.
This is a WATD political forum on 95.9 WATD, online at 95.9WATD.com. Now, live from Studio B, here's your moderator, WATD's Christine James.
And good evening and welcome to a WATD political forum. I am your moderator, Christine James, and I'm joined tonight by reporter Charles Mathewson. Monday Night Talk host Kevin Tachi, along with Art Edgerton from Pembroke Town News, all asking questions tonight. This race is for the Plymouth Barnstable State Senate. Democrat incumbent Sue Moran and Republican challenger Kerry McRae joining us here in studio. They're both running in the general election this fall. Timing you all is our own Lenny Rowe, and we're joined by our media partner, Pembroke Town News. Thank you for everybody for being here tonight. Our format is simple. We've asked the candidates to have prepared opening and closing statements ready. No longer than 2 minutes for an open and 1 minute for a close, please. We have a round of questions from the reporters, and that's where we ask you to stick to a minute for your answer. It shouldn't be any longer than that. And then our lightning round, where the answers are either yes or no or two sentences tops, and we will ask you what we would prefer, whether we want yes or no, or we want a one or two sentence answer. Now, we just chose, along with our own Charles Mathewson, opening and closing order out of the official WATD stand-in newsroom koozie, and we're going to begin with Sue Moran, and then we're going to go to Kerry McRae, and we will reverse that order at the end. So we're ready to get started here now, and let's say good evening to Sue Moran.
Good evening. On my select board, county government, and regional economic development councils, working on energy, water quality, substance abuse, veterans council, alongside my career as an attorney, small business owner, and most importantly, mother of three. My passion for
service comes first and foremost from my dad. A disabled Air Force veteran and proud union member, he was constantly fighting for people, and he taught me the value of advocacy at a young age. 2 years ago, an opportunity to run for the Senate opened, and I jumped at the chance because I wanted to deliver the necessary resources from Beacon Hill to the communities I had already been fighting so hard for. Every single day, I, alongside my incredible staff, field dozens of phone calls and emails from constituents in need of help. I've spent thousands of hours crisscrossing this district talking to people about challenges they're facing. Right now, I'm leading the battles for housing for everyone, preventing damage to our water and tourism industry by Holtec, and supporting municipalities and infrastructure needs like updated, safer fire stations. As we discuss the issues tonight, I hope that you recognize in me someone who has listened and is going to work tirelessly to get you the resources and relief that you and your neighbors need. I know how much work there's left to do. Being the state senator for the Plymouth and Barnstable District has been a joy and the honor of my life, and I plan to earn every vote this November in order to keep fighting for you.
Thank you very much. That was the opening statement from Sue Moran. And now let's go to Kerry McRae.
Thank you very much. Thank you for everybody taking your time out of your evening to host this debate for me and the senator. So my name is Kerry McRae, and I am running for state senate because our district needs a state senator that will be an independent voice. I am running to be your voice on Beacon Hill. The previous Republican state senator, Vinnie DiMacedo, set a pattern to which I want to learn from and implement in actually getting some things done here for our district. As a lifelong resident of the Plymouth and Barnstable District, I care about our community and promise to work hard to grow the district to its fullest potential. So a little about me. My husband, David, of 27 years, and our 4 children and 5 grandchildren live in the Bourne and Falmouth communities and look forward to raising many more generations here in the years to come. As a business high school teacher, having helped thousands of students over the years, I focused on building their confidence, nurturing their leadership skills, and encouraged them also to be independent thinkers. As an elected school board member, my goal was to support our students and their families, the taxpayers, and our teachers, ensuring we provide the resources necessary for success while keenly focused on fiscal responsibility. Being the daughter of a Coast Guard veteran and a retired police sergeant in New Bedford, I will actively support our veterans and public servants. I am running for state senate because I'm you, a citizen of the community that is worried about the affordability and sustainability of our great district. And I humbly ask for your vote on November 8th.
Thank you very much. That was the opening statement from Carrie McRae. I just want to make sure that I have the Plymouth and Barnstable district, the new district, correct, because I believe you've added two towns. So it is now Bourne, Falmouth, Kingston, Mashpee, Pembroke, Plymouth, Plimpton, and Sandwich.
That's right.
Okay. Added two towns there. Okay, let's start with questions, and let's begin now with Kevin Tachi, the host of Monday Night Talk.
Thank you, Christine. Thank you to the candidates for attending tonight's forum. I think probably the first thing I want to ask is, what would be your first set of priorities that you would look to tackle if you are elected come November 8th? So we will start with Carrie.
Thank you. Thank you for the question. I think one of the biggest things that I would like to tackle would be to give more transparency. I feel that as a citizen, oftentimes I'm not in the know, and it's very difficult to find what's going on and, you know, how our elected officials are voting and what they're standing by, what they're trying to get accomplished, what they're supporting and not supporting. So a big thing for me would foremost, I guess you could say, to make sure that we have more transparency and to focus on that.
So do you feel that with our South Shore delegation that there isn't enough transparency amongst them, especially the senator?
I think, I would say that I think that we could do more. I definitely think we could do more.
Okay. I'll let you respond to her in a moment, but same question for you in regards to your first set of priorities if you're elected come November 8th.
Right now, it's the economy. There's a lot of money coming in from the federal government. There'll soon be from the state a return of taxes. And that money should be spent as people want to in their own families. And in order to do that, we have to make sure the economy is healthy. A healthy economy keeps taxes low because we have businesses that are attracted to the region. It is an investment in our quality of life. One of the things as chair of Consumer Protection and Public Licensure, I brought the hearings right to Plymouth Town Hall on this side of the bridge so that we could directly speak with businesses about what they need. Right now, there are staffing crises still. People are having to pay more money and raise their prices. There are also supply chain concerns. So that's what we need to work on immediately.
Your opponent says that there's not enough transparency. Do you feel that you are not transparent enough or your colleagues are not transparent enough?
You know, I would say there are two different things here. Transparency, absolutely there's enough transparency. But my experience on the Board of Selectmen, especially chairing, people get their information in different ways. The Senate, for example, is on TV. I have a website. We take numerous emails and telephone calls a day. I give out my cell phone directly. And so if there are questions that where people want to have a conversation, they can ask it directly, and the votes are a matter of record.
Okay, thank you.
Art Edgerton from Pembroke Town News. Questions for the candidates.
Yes, my department is the environment, and one of the major things that's going on now and in the future will be water supply. Pembroke has two water supplies, one Big Sandy Pond, which goes to Abington, Rockland, and then Silver Lake, which feeds Brockton and some other towns along the way. Do you have any ideas or plans for dealing with that issue coming up, Susan?
Thank you for the question. So the water quality is a keen interest of mine. I was on the Water Quality Coalition when I was a member of the Board of Selectmen. I speak regularly with Pine Dubois, who has been really branching out in terms of embayment studies. And, in fact, the minority leader, Bruce Tarr, in the Senate, recently is having a forum, and it's very parallel to the one that I done over the past 5 years in Falmouth. So this is absolutely essential. It's one of the reasons I've been a leader in the fight against Holtec to keep our water clean. And so it's absolutely imperative for our health going forward. And it also is a source of jobs. So that's a double benefit right there.
Same question to Carrie. Do you have any thoughts about the situation between Brockton and Pembroke and Abington-Rockland?
So I have heard a little bit about it. I actually was at a meeting the other day in Pembroke, the town meeting, and they spoke briefly about this. And it seems like, from what I'm hearing, there's a lot of red tape that needs to be cut through. And I don't know what the answer is to how to handle that. But I will say that if there are things that are being abused and people that maybe aren't stepping up that can to address more of these issues, I think that's probably one of the things that we need to get involved with, is kind of get down to the nitty and gritty of why these issues are happening, especially with what I've heard from about Brockton.
Okay. Let's go to Charles Mathewson. Questions for the candidates.
Carrie, the first policy point on your website is to keep critical race theory out of schools. Are you talking about public schools, K-12?
Yes, I am.
What really is the chance of that happening?
Well, actually, as a school board member, I have been very active in my seat, and getting some of these, this curriculum or the trainings that we were offering, even our teachers, removed from the school district. There was a presentation that our school board, that our assistant superintendent gave, and in the presentation, she was talking about platforms, trainings that we were going to offer for our teachers. And one of the companies we were using was called Black Print. And so I went home that night and I dug in and Googled Black Print, like, what is this about? And I was able to find that quite a few of the lessons that the teachers would be involved in as far as, training, one of the lessons is actually called critical race theory in the visual arts and how to apply it through the visual arts. So, yes, there is training that has been pushed through as far as the Department of Ed, but fortunately I've been able to get some of it removed.
Because that's a graduate level subject, actually postgraduate level subject.
A graduate level, like, class. Yes, absolutely. There isn't in the high school or in the middle school or the elementary. You can't sign up and say, I'd like to take the critical race theory class. That is true. In college, you can. But what's happening in the Department of Ed, you can actually, if you do your own research, if you go to the Department of Ed in Massachusetts and you look at the curriculum and you look at the offerings for some of the classes that the kids, some of the information that's embedded into some of the curriculum, it is of critical race theory.
How about any other aspects of post-structuralism would you reject?
Any, what do you mean by that?
Well, critical theory is part of post-structuralism, and I'm wondering what other parts you might, like feminism, post-colonialism, Marxism is part of post-structuralism.
Okay. So what is your question? Is your question whether or not...
Are there any other aspects that are related to post-structuralism like feminism or post-colonialism, which refers to we were a colony, the old colony, and now we're not, and that's a piece of history, or new historicism, or are there any other, or is critical race theory the only thing? thing that you would object to in that?
Well, I think what I would say is that there is pieces of history that we definitely need to focus on and we need to remember, right? And I will say that we've had issues across the country where we have been removing history, and I have a problem with that too. So I think that in school, in public education, we need to focus on fixing the education system as far as what the kids are learning, making sure that if you look at the grades and you look at the scoring from students, we need to do more to educate them in mathematics. We need to educate them more in English. There are students that are graduating high school as a math teacher and as a business teacher. We'll tell you, there are students that are graduating today that cannot write cursive, that can't read cursive. So I think that if we focus on those core elements, then absolutely we should be able to introduce and segue with that.
So my mother was an elementary school teacher, and I failed cursive. The Palmer method was never, you know. Yeah, you're looking at my notes. So you, what do you think about what we're teaching in the schools and CRT and feminism?
Well, you put your finger right on it. Critical race theory is a college course in general, and you know, we can certainly learn from our mistakes in history. That being said, my daughter, Jolene, taught fourth grade, and I would come to the house and feed the kids while she was late into the evening still emailing parents, helping out kids who needed more help. The thing that we need to do right now, post-COVID especially, is focus on the children and the teachers and give them the resources that they need, which I've been able to do in the Senate. I also have a bill that's very close to passing at pretty marked speed, called it's described at commonstartma.org. And what it does for education is it provides help for families who need financial assistance, and it provides teachers with the ability to add to their credentials.
And if you feel like during this forum that you have a question that you didn't get to fully answer, you want to make another comment, you can always use some of that when you make your closing statement. Excuse me. I think we all have colds tonight or allergies.
I just got over.
Cough.
I'm good now.
Okay, all right, good.
Yeah. So am I. I just got over the flu.
Okay, I'm going to move down two seats.
But meanwhile, over.
Okay, you're listening to a WATD political forum here. The race is for the Plymouth and Barnstable District. We have both candidates. We have the Democrat incumbent, Sue Moran, and her Republican challenger, Carrie McRae. I want to ask a question now about affordable housing. It's an interesting district because you've got part of the district on one side of the canal and part on the other. And you've got, when it comes to affordable housing, I think you have two issues, really. How are people who are here year-round and just, I guess, regular people versus a lot of seasonal workers that you bring in on Cape Cod to work in the summers? So the affordable housing solution for both those segments of society might not be the same. So I'm going to ask this as a two-part question. I'll give you a minute for each. Sue, what can you do to help seasonal workers get affordable housing? It's always been expensive down there. Back in the Stone Ages when I waitressed in the Cape on the summers when I was in college, it was never cheap. But now it's astronomical to even find a place or rent a place in the summer.
My nickname is Wilma.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Fred. So let's start first with seasonal workers. What can you do to help them?
So seasonal workers have been creatively assisted by actually their employers. Bill Zammer, for example, who owned several restaurants, would actually buy properties to house his employees. Lots of creative solutions have been suggested. The Cape Cod Baseball League has sort of a format where kids do stay with families. We're trying to be very creative and be sure that kids who, whether they're from other countries or summer, whatever they want, a safe place to stay where they can be productive during their work, earn lots of money. And so we're looking at Also off-season college buildings. We're wringing the ideas out from every possible subject. And that's just for the summer workers.
Okay. I'll give you a minute to talk about just regular people on both sides of the canal. I mean, do you think that there's a danger of it even becoming – I think it was an article I read, was it in the Globe, several months ago about what the median price of a house on Nantucket is, which is – what was it, over $1.6 million? I probably have that number wrong.
That's cheap.
I believe it was something along those lines. It was crazy. Yeah. It might have been over $2 million, but yeah. I think a lot of people are afraid that that's what might be happening to some of the communities in this district.
It's a crisis. We need housing for everyone. I was able to bring $1 million into the district for affordable housing. What's affordable housing now? It's housing that our nurses, our first responders, lots of people come within that medium range. I've also been doing some coalition building about every 6 weeks. On the Plymouth side of my district, I have had a workshop of not only housing experts, state funding experts, the housing folks from the town of Plymouth, and also builders to collaborate about how does this actually work. The Governor Baker had put forth a couple of programs, really Boston-centric type of programs that really didn't work in Pembroke very well, really didn't work as easily in Plymouth and other towns. So I brought the candidate, Maura Healy, to the train station in Plymouth to take a look at a housing development there, and I've raised the level of concern. So that's exactly what we're looking at, new opportunities.
Okay. I mean, two-part question, Carrie. First, about how do you help the seasonal workers find a place to live, and then give you another minute and talk about what about just people who are here year-round, the regular workers. What kind of a solution do you see?
Well, I think you know, part of the solution is basically, you know, maybe looking at buildings that we have that are empty. You know, even down in the Cape, we have some hotels where it really, you know, over the winter time, you know, that could be, you know, maybe turned into more of a affordable housing for some people if they meet, you know, certain criteria, especially for the people that are here year round, you know, support, like, I don't know, people that, you know, want to come here and take a look at if there's opportunity for them to stay here permanently. As far as the seasonal workers, I think right now, you know, there was issues with even people being able to afford to come to Massachusetts or come to these areas, not even just about the housing piece of it, but just the affordability to even, you know, to come here.
Okay. Now let's go back down to Kevin Chachi. Questions for the candidates?
Just a quick footnote is I actually work with high school students, and half of my students struggle with cursive as well.
Okay.
It's amazing, especially when they get to sign their timesheet. Serious? No, I have one kid of six. Cursive, what is that? I'm like, what grade are you in? Anyways, with a new administration comes new ideals, and we will have a new administration as of January. If proposed in the next legislative session, would you support a mileage tax as an initiative to generate revenue, especially if we go for towards transportation infrastructure? Carrie?
I absolutely would not support a mileage tax. I think half the problem what we have right now is there are so many places where people are trying to, instead of getting out and going to work in jobs, everybody wants to still stay home. And so, for one, I don't think we'd get much revenue from it. And for another, I think that the people that are traveling to work, whether they're coming into the state, you know, and live in Rhode Island or live in New Hampshire, it doesn't matter. I mean, we're already taxing so much. People can't afford more taxes. I mean, they can't. And frankly, we have a surplus right now. And with our surplus, you know, maybe we use part of that to actually fix the roads and fix the bridges. And you know, we already, excise tax, there's already so many things that, gas tax, that's already supposed to pay for infrastructure, the roads, and such.
So you'd say no to a toll on Route 3 or to go over the bridge?
Absolutely, I would say no.
Same question to you in regards to a mileage tax, if it was an initiative that was put forth by the new governor.
We have to do something about climate change, and so we need more incentives to go away from carbon. Right now, transportation is responsible for something like 40%, so we would cut that down if we could properly address automobiles fast enough. And we also do need two new bridges. One of the first things I did was I got $350,000 for design of the new bridges. Is the right answer a mileage tax? I would say no. I think it needs to be a comprehensive legislative designed fix. I don't think that we can properly design something that both incentivizes going away from gasoline, accounts for people needing to work on one side of the bridge or the other, families going back and forth from doctor's appointments or visiting family. So not a mileage tax, but we do need solutions.
But what about if there was that they offered or suggested a toll on Route 3 or to go over the bridges?
A toll on Route 3,
yeah.
We're going away from tolls. I'm not, you know why? Because they never disappear. If we do a toll for a new bridge, then it's, so I'm not
a rumor. Am I wrong here? Did they not? They were teasing it. So you think?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Let's go to Art Edgerton.
Okay, back to the city of Brockton, even though that's not in your district. Do you have any thoughts about them connecting to the carbon reservoir? And if so, how can that happen? And we'll go to Carrie first.
I will say, I don't know. I don't know enough about what that impact would be on the communities. I think that they definitely have a problem there in Brockton and needs to be resolved. You know, and hopefully when I get elected, I will be able to meet with the right people and participate in solving that issue.
So I've already started meeting with people involved. I mentioned Pime Dubois originally. Also, the minority leader has just done a comprehensive meeting of experts in the area. It's something that's being studied right now. We need more clean water. The area has to be rejuvenated. It's not something that can be ignored anymore. So it's a matter of communication. It's a matter also of letting the communities know about proposed projects and having opportunities for people to read in with their opinions. Some people get their information from the newspaper, others radio, ATD. The more conversations we have about this, the better. So thank you so much for that question.
Okay. Charles Mathewson.
So I've been asking this question in all of the legislative forums lately. Do you trust the voting process?
Absolutely, I do trust it. I've actually been studying it since I was a member of the Board of Selectmen, just particularly starting with Falmouth, because that's where I began. Michael Palmer, as the town clerk, he's been the town clerk probably 20, 30 years. He's like many of the clerks, I've spoken with just about all of them. Sandwich, Bourne, Plymouth, of course, we have New in Plymouth. And the people that run the offices for voting take it extremely seriously. They have regular volunteers. They want kept safe. During COVID, they were masked. Every time they tell me, this works, this doesn't. We need more efficient systems. You don't need to sign in twice. Sign in once. What I do immediately is I write up legislation and I submit it exactly the way those boots on the ground need it.
Carrie, do you trust the voting process?
I absolutely do trust the voting process. I think that, you know, I've gone around the district and introduced myself to the town clerks and the administrators, and I do trust them. And I think that definitely want to make sure that the whole process, from mail-in ballots to, you know, people coming in to vote, to make sure that they, you know, their vote is only counted once, and they're all cognizant of the new process. You know, the mail-in ballots, you know, as much as I personally think that it should be as it was before, which was if you weren't going to be in the area or if you were in the military, that that should be option for you, because I think everybody should have the right to vote, obviously. But I think that the town clerks and the town administrators feel like they really have this under control, and I trust them, yes.
You're listening to a WATD Political Forum. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes right here on 95.9 WATD.
That truck, it pays?
What?
The bumper sticker on that truck says it pays.
Pays? Pays what?
I can't quite read it. Oh, it pays to stay way back.
Ah, what was that?
The truck! Snap back or rock! Now I've got a broken windshield.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny and Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. It pays to stay way back. However, if your windshield is broken, just call 1-888-64-TINYS. And thank you.
Don't miss the Just Steph Show every Monday night from 8 to 10 p.m. for fun guests and tips on living your best life every day. I'm bringing sexy back to Monday nights.
Tonight from 8 to 10 on 95.9 WATD.
Each year, about 1 out of 2 men and 1 out of 3 women will develop cancer. But there's good news. Today's cancer survival odds are much better than 2 or even 3 years ago. Things move that fast. So if you're diagnosed, be sure to have someone in your corner who is on top of all the latest cancer treatments and techniques, the latest research, the newest equipment, all the newest medicines available through clinical trials. And speaking of corners, here's more good news. Advanced cancer care is now just around the corner. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare treats patients locally, with all oncology services and specialties conveniently housed under one roof. The center is affiliated with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, so you'll be seen by Harvard Medical faculty physicians and oncologists. The Green Cancer Center at Signature Healthcare, in affiliation with Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Cancer has just met its match. Find out why at mysignaturecare.org/cancercare.
McGuigan's Pub is an upscale Irish pub with all the class of a Boston pub. The menu offers favorites like steak tips, fish and chips, meatloaf, as well as burgers, sandwiches, and pizza. The relaxed, comfortable atmosphere at McGuigan's makes it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize with family and friends. New hours are Tuesday through Thursday, 4 to close, Friday through Sunday, 11:30 to close. McGuigan's Pub is at 546 Washington Street in Whitman, with the full menu available at McGuigan'sPub.com.
Hey, it's John Shea here from Almost Famous Radio, introducing you to independent bands and musicians from across New England. Brought to you by Tiny and Sons Glass. So last week, we turned our attention to the New England Music Awards. This week, it's all about the Boston Music Awards. You can cast your vote and see the complete list at bostonmusicawards.com. And tune in tomorrow night, 8 till 10, to hear some of the nominees. Almost Famous, every Tuesday night, 8 till 10, right here on 95.9 WATD and always online at 95.9WATD.com.
WATD's Political Forum continues. Now, back to Studio B. Here's your moderator, Christine James.
Thank you. That's right. We are back here in our political forum, the race for the Plymouth Barnstable District. We've got the incumbent Sue Moran and her challenger, Carrie McRae. I believe we were going to me with questions. So my question is, and I've asked this
I thought we were going to skip over you.
No, never. So now we're here. Something just very basic, which I've asked in a lot of these forums. Why do you want the job? What's the payback? What's the reward for you, Sue?
This is something I've been working towards my entire life. My dad was that guy at town meeting who would stand up and say, "Wait a minute." And, of course, as a kid, I would cringe. My uncle was a public defender. I became a lawyer. And when my youngest went to college, I was asked to run, and I thought, well, shucks, I'm losing one job. I might as well pick up another. And I had coffee or tea with about 300 people, and I realized that I could use my experience as a lawyer, a business lawyer in particular, my interest in economic development, and further the community's wishes. And the reason that I went for the job as a senator is because I've had 5 or 6 years of training in what's needed. Now I'm at the State House to bring back those resources. It's the best job.
Okay. Carrie McRae, same question. What's the payback? What's the reward? Why do you want this job?
Well, the main reason why I want this job is because I feel that more people need to get involved. And, you know, I was, you know, a teacher, a mom, a grandmom, and I saw things going in a different direction, and I wanted to get involved. And going on the school committee, I started to see more things. I started to see that, you know, a lot of the things that I didn't really support were attached to money that was coming from the state, attached to money that was coming from the federal government. And I started digging in more, and that's why I kind of opened with transparency, as it was very difficult for me to try to navigate and follow stuff. So I think the main reason why I'm doing this is because I know the main reason. It's because I want to make sure that I've done my part and contributed to making it and keeping it a great place for my children, my grandchildren, and future generations in our area. I've grown up in Buzzards Bay. I've lived there pretty much my whole entire life, and that's why I'm involved.
Okay. Let's go to Kevin Tonchi now. Questions for the candidates?
Prior to the pandemic, probably one of the questions the panel here would have asked was about jobs. Are there enough jobs for folks to be able to work? Now I think it's since the pandemic, the biggest problem is, is there enough qualified staff or individuals to fill jobs that are open? Is the state doing enough to help small businesses when it comes to hiring or maintaining staff? Susan.
Well, it's an ongoing process. So in the Senate, in the healthcare area, what we've done is we've made sure that folks can practice to the very top of their licenses so that they are qualified for more jobs. When I've visited the technical schools oftentimes in the district, and our educators and the administrators are really closely working with the administration and with the colleges so that they have, for example, white rooms have been funded and created so that high-level technologies. When you look at the commercial aspects of production moving forward and just the sort of supplies that we've been missing, we're now starting to create those supplies here. It's so as the need is created, we need to jump on that.
Would you have confidence in the state's labor and workforce committees and the work that's being done to make sure that they can do an ample job of supporting small businesses?
Look at the climate change bill. Talk about pivoting. All the engineering that's involved, when you look at economic development, those are all job creation. Look at my child care bill. That's a jobs bill. That gets families, especially women, back to work. Right now, it's my complete focus. I grew up on economic development. I chaired economic development for the Cape and for Falmouth, and putting people back in the jobs that they want, giving them options, work-at-home options. I'd like to see tax benefits for companies that can offer more work-from-home options. That's also better for climate opportunities, and it helps families who may need that.
Carrie, same question as far as the state. Is it doing enough to help small businesses be able to find and secure individuals for staffing?
I don't think we're doing enough for that, to be quite honest. I think that while I've been talking with people and looking at people who are trying to find jobs, it seems like everybody these days, even one of my daughters, said, you know, I'm trying to find a job where I can stay at home. That's not good. For people to stay at home is not good. We need to interact. We're human beings. I think we need to, you know, this is the reason why the mom and pop stores are struggling to find people, because there are more and more jobs that are online and where people can sit at home in their pajamas, in their bed, and just answer phones or do data entry and things like that. So I don't think that we're doing enough. I think that the pandemic really put us at a disservice to the small businesses, because frankly, the small businesses in town, they don't do a huge amount of their business online, or, you know, they don't. A pizza shop, you know, they're having to close down nights or leave early because of that.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear that someone, I want a job title to be an influencer. You know, you stay home.
Put on eyeliner.
Yes.
Make $500,000 a year, I believe, from what I've heard. Any follow-up for that?
All set.
Okay, let's go back to Art Edgerton, Pembroke Town News.
Thank you. I'd like to talk about the herring a little bit. Herring are very important fish. They are all over our region. Is there anything that you think that the state can do to help boost their population size? Because even though sometimes they're pretty high right now, they're still significantly lower than they used to be back, you know, 100, 200 years ago. And Susan, sorry, could you talk about anything with the herring that you know about?
So about the herring run, is that what you're speaking
to?
Herring,
or? Herring population, is there anything that the state can do to help increase the levels of herring?
To increase the level? You know, I'm not sure what we could do as far as the state getting involved for herring run. I know that, you know, obviously the fishing industry has come under a lot of scrutiny as far as regulations and things like that, and I'm sure that that's playing part of you know, messing with natural resources and how things organically happen. So I don't know. I don't know exactly what the answer is to bringing in or increasing the herring population, but I will say that if the government is regulating the resources that we can do, when we can fish, you know, and changing what the natural process is, that could be part of the problem.
Same question, Sue?
Thanks. So I was directly involved in the restoration of the herring run in Falmouth that's on the edge of Mashpee. In collaboration with Rep. Dave Vieira, we started meeting with the landowners, which is in most of that area, it's a rod and gun club. And right contiguously, Betsy Gladfelder, who's on the Conservation Commission, also happens to be a Hui scientist, took on the obligation of bringing together about 16 state and federal organizations to get the funding. It's been about a 4 or 5 year project. And the restoration of the cranberry bogs, which had already run farrow at the time, now you can actually see there's an observation deck with a learning block for students. You can actually watch the herring, and they create little cooling areas, little warm areas. They can travel back and forth. It's hugely successful, and it's happening closer to Plymouth as well.
You realize how important the herring are to the whole ecosystem, because they bring back all kinds of wildlife when there's a lot of fish, a lot of things for them to eat. So
right on.
Okay.
Charles Mathewson?
Art keeps asking these local questions that Kevin and I normally ask about water. And
That's
all. It's okay. Herring is very big in Pembroke. But the only problem is they actually ask you to eat it. As I reside in Plymouth, and so the county woodlot is a large issue, and it looks like the developers are going to bypass successfully local control. As a senator, how could you influence the Gaming Commission, Carrie?
So as a senator, how could I influence the Gaming Commission?
Yes.
As far as what, like?
The proposal for the county woodlot in Plymouth.
So whether or not to be able to hunt there, is that what you're saying?
To site a casino.
Oh, that's right. That's
West
right.
Racing.
I guess, you know, I'm sure as a senator there is, a portion of influence where you get more information and you're able to see, you know, the whole picture on where, you know, how much revenue you're going to get compared to how much this is going to potentially damage, you know, when we're talking about natural wildlife and such. So I don't know. I've the research that I've done myself so far leads me to saying that I personally wouldn't support having, you know, the racing there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if.
So how would you influence the Gaming Commission that seems to be the key player at this point?
So there are a number of things that I would do. If you look at Holtec, for an example, that's something that's really governed in part by the state through the memorandum. And I've been a part of the NDCAP review as well as with the delegation, Reps Lenatra, Muratori, Cutler, proposed legislation. Similarly, with the proposal for gaming, one of the things that I'm ready to do is put in writing exactly the questions, the concerns, opposition, the also look to the community. What would the community prefer as an alternative economic development sort of proposal that the county government is looking for money? That's one of the things. So let's look at some alternatives. Let's have a multi-tacit approach here.
Wood lot would probably be good, the neighbors say.
Leave it alone.
That's what they're saying, yeah. Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Both.
Let's talk about small business again. I know when you talk about small business, we think about shops on Main Street and all these communities, but small business is also local accountants, dentists, any other financial services, all these different types of businesses. How could you help small business in your community? What do they say? Small businesses really drive the economy. So let's start with you, Sue. What are you doing to help small business?
Well, it does drive the economy. Buy local, as they say. I've been a small business lawyer for most of my life, in-house counsel outsourced for many businesses. And I was on the tourism committee, for example. And when you look at the ocean-facing communities that we have in the district, most of the towns are, it's a foundational for the health and vibrancy of the community. But you know, when it's really about, for example, I did a tour of just a sidewalk walking tour in Plymouth with the tourism committee, also with the chambers of commerce. I'm been member of chamber for years and looking at what do the businesses need. I stopped at restaurants. Restaurants need, they don't want a happy hour. Too much liability, too much cost. They want support for their suppliers. They want support for their employers. Thank you.
Same question, Carrie. What can we do for small business? Not just the brick and mortars, but, you know, the accountants, the construction companies, all the other types of businesses that make up small business.
I think the one thing that we could do right off the bat is, which I completely supported, was give gas tax relief. You know, everybody, you know, needs to buy gas. Some people are, you know, running their homes with gas heat. I think that we need to do more to give back and to reduce the expense of living in Massachusetts. And, you know, if you track the dollar and how many taxes we pay on that $1 that we earn, I do lessons with my students all the time, and they're flabbergasted with how much money they get left. And then on top of that, it gets taxed when they go to spend it, whether it be on their cell phone bill and so on and so forth. So I think one thing that we have the power to do is to give more tax breaks and let people keep their money in their pockets, more of it.
Okay. Thank you. Kevin Tauchi, questions for the candidates?
Sure. The MBTA has just been rife with problems, including issues with the Orange Line and the Green Line. How many more tax dollars do we need to invest in this troubled system? And is it time to talk about privatizing the MBTA? Susan?
Absolutely. There is so much deferred maintenance on the MBTA. There have been public safety concerns The recent close down of the Orange Line, it's back running, but not the same service that it has been. Right now, the Plymouth train station is closed. The thing that bothers me the most is that the sinkhole that the MBTA is draws resources away from my communities, where I'm already having GATRA, CCRTA, they're doing the best they can to service their communities. Human service transportation for folks who need trips to doctor's appointments, those folks are strained out, and that system is strained. We need to have we definitely do need that oversight.
Same question. The MBTA, many problems over the years, billions of dollars. Is it time to privatize?
I don't know if it's time to privatize it, but I think it's time for it to be revamped and to have different leadership. And, you know, and part of the issues with some of these conglomerates like MBTA is the unions. And, you know, you have the same leadership for years and years and years and years. They can't get rid of people that aren't doing their job successfully. And, you know, that's part of the issue. If you're not doing your job right, and if we keep having infractions, there's safety concerns and so on and so forth, then, you know, we need to look at the leadership.
Okay, thank you. Art, questions for the candidates?
Susan, as you know, our district is sort of varied in its the way it is. Can you talk a little bit about that and how you bring it all together as a senator?
Sure. You know, the thing that that I've learned about every community is that we have more in common than differences. So with my experience having been on veterans committees, having been on Water Quality Coalition, having been on climate committees, having really schooled myself at all of those, the infrastructure issues, the technology issues, developing solar at the landfill kind of thing. All of those housing issues, I have a forum I invite all the communities to, and they get to talk about their commonalities as well as the challenges, where some communities have particularly challenged in one area, they'll share a solution with someone else, try it out. We've got a lot more in common than we have differences.
Same question, Karen?
Yes. So, you know, at the end of the day, all of our communities, we are all towns, rally around everyday concerns. How are we going to heat our homes? How are we going to afford to pay our bills? How are we going to afford to get to work? You know, how are we going to afford gas? How are we going to afford food? You know, how are we going to afford anything and everything? It's where everybody's struggling right now. The other thing that people are really rallying around is that, you know, the district is beautiful district, beautiful resources, beautiful natural resources that we have all the way from Mashpee, Falmouth, and back up here to Pembroke, Plimpton. And I think that the majority of people realize that we need to do more to protect the resources and to give people opportunities to stay here.
Thank you. Charles Matthewson, questions for the candidates?
There's a new proposal to eliminate vertical buoy lines. Would you support that, Sue?
You know, we've got to do something. The fishing community, lobster people, along with the whale, you know, injuries that have happened. The efficiency is part of it. Pricing for food is important. So I had the head of the Lobster Association on PAC TV for my I do an In Your Corner show, and you know the issue which often comes about is the proposed solutions are proposed by folks who don't do the job. And so that's where the communication comes in. I'm not a fan of spending a lot of money on studies and not really getting to solutions quick enough. But I think I'm going to have more forums about what would be a better solution, especially with the recent whale dying.
Okay. Carrie? Question, Carrie?
So from the people that I've talked with in the fishing history industry and lobstering in particular, you know, I believe from what I understood there was one right whale that got entangled, but they were able to resolve it. And as soon as we keep adding it, if we keep adding more regulations and more regulations, it's going to hurt the small businesses to the point that they're not going to be able to afford it or want to tolerate the restrictions that they have. You know, there are lobstermen who have been lobstering for years who are now, you know, struggling because our state keeps limiting the amount of time that they can lobster. And it's very expensive. I mean, I've been on a couple of lobster boats even this year, and it's, you know, they go out lobster and they get a couple of crates. They're losing money, but they're trying to provide food, natural food, protein source to the citizens in the district.
We're going to go to our lightning round now. And again, this is lightning, like quick like a bunny lightning. So we ask questions and it's yes.
Quick like a bunny.
I'm quoting my mother. It's a yes or
a quick like a ferret.
Thank you. It's either a yes or no answer or one or two sentences tops. And, of course, this is just part of your district, but it wouldn't be a forum unless I asked it. Plymouth County government, stay or go? Let's start with you, Carrie. Stay or go?
Go.
Okay. Sue?
Stay, make it better.
Okay. Charles Mathewson, lightning round question.
Were you to go sailing, would you prefer Buzzards Bay or Cape Cod Bay? Carrie.
Buzzards Bay.
Sue.
It's like choosing from children. I'd say Cape Cod.
Okay. Art, lightning round question.
What's your favorite kind of power generation? Nuclear, coal, oil, natural gas?
Okay. Carrie?
I would say oil.
Okay. Sue?
Nuclear fission has okay. some good potential.
Okay. Kevin Chachi?
Gas. No.
Okay.
Would you ever support legislation for the placement of resource officers in every school around the Commonwealth?
That a yes or no?
It's a yes
okay.
or no.
Carrie?
Absolutely would.
Yes. Sue?
Yes.
Okay. Let's go to closing statements now. We're going to switch the order. We began with Sue and then went to Carrie. So this time we'll begin with Carrie and go to Sue. You have 1 minute. Go right ahead, Carrie McRae.
So I just want to say thank you very much for this forum. Thank you very much for your time. And, you know, I am you. I am the everyday citizen in the district that is struggling to make ends meet and wants the best for my children and my grandchildren. If I'm elected by you, the voters of the Plymouth and Barnesville District, I will represent you. I will make sure that I'm there to answer the phone when you call. I will be present. I will be focused, and I will take your voice, you know, into consideration with every vote that I make.
Thank you. That was a
closing statement with Carrie McRae. Now let's go to Sue Moran.
Thank you, Christine. Look, this district is filled with people of many backgrounds and many perspectives. It's my job to represent all of you. What I've proven over the last 2 years is that I can deliver the kind of leadership and results our district deserves. I'm proud to have brought in millions of dollars to our district, investments big and small. It's $150,000 to study a Plymouth Area Convention Center, $40,000 for a new fire station boiler. It's $10,000 for Silver Lake Middle School Courtyard in Kingston and $1 million for housing development. You can also bet I'm going to give it my all to earn your votes. If you want to get involved with our campaign, please go to www.votemoran.com. We'd love to hear from you and have you on the team. I'm humbly asking for your vote on or before November 8th. Early voting starts October 22nd, so don't wait. Get out there and vote. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Sue Moran. You're listening to the candidates here for the Plymouth and Barnstable State Senate District. And I'm WATD's Christine James. We've got Larry Nelson here, engineering, Charles Mathewson from WATD asking questions, Art Edgerton from Pembroke Town News, our own Kevin Tachi, the host of Monday Night Talk, Lenny Rowe over there, and thank you for doing the timing. This is all going to be up online, and of course, stay tuned to WATD for complete election coverage. You can join us on election night, which is November 8th, and as we tell you every time, get out and vote. If you don't vote, you don't have a voice. I'm Christine James. Thanks for listening right here, 95.9 WATD.
WATD FM Marshfield.